The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where we do our best to answer your questions that might come in via email or phone call or carrier pigeon. We haven't gotten one of those for a while, but if we happen to get one, we'll get right on that. My name's Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier, as usual, and today we've got questions on a variety of topics of unknown specificity. Because Jim didn't share with me the pile of questions that we've got ahead of time. So I'm sure we've got some Social Security questions, some retirement questions, some tax questions, all of the above, maybe a bucketing question in there or two, or who knows what's in there. So
I don't know.
I think we should actually increase the challenge level of the show a little bit and actually put all these in some kind of a hat or something and just pick them out and attack them randomly. That would increase the adrenaline on the show, at least. No? Okay, never mind. I just got the deer in the headlights look from Jim. Plus, he's sucking on some kind of candy, trying to avoid the coughing fit.
Eating a chewy jelly bean, which is not the wisest thing to try doing before going live on a radio recording.
Yeah, probably true. Just don't drink that coffee you have there, because it always makes you have a coughing fit.
You know, we were talking in my office for what? A good 45, 50, 60, 90, mm-hmm. 120 minutes? Know. A long time.
A while.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't cough once.
No, but now you've stressed your voice and you're about to cough on the radio probably.
Hey, did you get that podcast email I sent you? Is everything all set with our recording voices?
I did. Part of that was intentional. So for those of you who have noticed in the past couple of months, the volume level being a little bit lower. We were actually kind of overloading at times the volume level in the past, so I dialed it back. I've dialed it back up a little bit to kind of hit a sweet spot maybe, but that was the reason for that volume.
So decrease. If anybody has feedback on our volume, if we need to be higher or lower, let us know, and Chris will adjust the volume again.
I've bumped it up a little bit.
So. And that was an iTunian who reached out to us and said, hey, I got to crank my earbuds all the way up.
Well, to 35 out of 100. I don't know if it was excessive.
How do you know it was 35 out of 100?
Because he said that. He said 25 to 35.
How do you know it's out of 100?
I don't know for sure, but that's kind of typical.
25 to 35 out of 40 would be pretty damn loud.
Yeah, but if he needed to do 42 out of 40, that's when the problem occurs.
Well, anyways, for that listener, thank you for letting us know that we didn't sound as loud and crisp and clear as we should. And Chris made some adjustments. If listeners still feel Chris is screwing up, don't hesitate to reach out to him.
Or if Jim is blasting your ears out when he gets all animated and emotional.
Moi?
Yeah. So we'll all see how it goes.
Let's answer a couple of more theoretically related questions than hot and fast answer questions.
Hang on a second. Our live broadcasting doesn't seem to be working like it normally does, so...
What do I have to wait?
There we go. Okay, go ahead.
Can I keep going?
Yes.
Thank you. We
had people trying to listen that the sound wasn't coming through.
A person or multiple people?
Multiple, actually. So now they can hear us.
Why don't you let our regular iTunians and new iTunians know how they can listen live and get their question answered live if anyone actually ever called? Remember we had a lot of calls and no calls?
We did, and I've stopped hooking up the phone because of that, but I can easily reach behind me and get it.
Well, we got a call a couple weeks ago. But
I'm ready for
recording.
It now. I'm ready for it now.
All right, so how do you
but
do
if,
that?
If you want to listen live while we're recording this, which makes it even better than normal, is what I've heard.
Wow.
You can just go to our website, jimhelps.com. If you click on the radio or the podcast link there, there'll be a little portion of that web page where you can listen there and then actually sign up through the service that we use to broadcast live. It's called Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R. I believe I'm 99% sure the basic account there is free. Then it'll notify you whenever we go live and you can listen as we record.
But you can also get your questions answered live. That's
correct.
The cool thing.
Well, yeah, and then if you can call in, we don't use the app to converse with people, but you can call in live if the urge overcomes you.
Absolutely, because like one of the questions we answered last week was from November. You really let the ball drop on that one.
Oh, yeah. I'm in control of the pile.
And today, right now, I have a question from February 7th and March 7th.
Oh,
now, the March 7th person is probably going to be wicked happy.
Well, let's handle the November one first.
We don't. We have February or March.
Oh, I thought you just said something about November.
Did I say November instead of March?
Yeah.
I said February 7th and March 7th.
Okay.
I got the recording. We'll listen to it later.
That's fine. So let's do February.
February 7th. Thanks, guys, for the great podcast. Jim is the best.
No, that's not what it says. I can tell. I can always tell.
How can you tell?
Because the second sentence, you change the tone of your reading, and I can always tell when you're trying to embellish.
I need to write the embellishment ahead of time.
Yeah, so it just comes out
just
naturally.
Flow, yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys, for the great podcast. Can I have a am I ready to retire question answered? That's why I said this is more theoretical.
Yeah.
And one thing to remember on this listener and probably the next question as well, Chris and I have not entered into a financial planning contract or agreement, nor are we doing an in-depth analysis of your situation. So hence, you're going to see us hedging our bets greatly with the answer, which is he wants to know if he can retire. And it's pretty much going to be impossible for us to answer, can you retire? But we are going to give you some thoughts of things to consider. So back to the question. Thanks, guys, for a great podcast.
You've said that three times now.
Well, maybe someone just turned on the podcast now.
Just go ahead.
How about am I ready?
There it is.
Don't get me going. How about am I ready to retire question? I have $1.4 million in diversified stock IRA 401k accounts and $50,000 in an emergency reserve. My monthly spending is $7,000 a month. I am 57 and so is my wife. I have issues, or there are issues. There are issues on the horizon with my job, which is our only income. Would you give your opinion on if this is a big enough portfolio for us to retire early? That is a loaded question.
What did they have in invested assets?
$1.4 million.
All spending
IRAs, always taxable accounts.
Spending $84,000 a year.
I would assume adjusted for inflation, and that's probably, listener, I'm guessing, what you're spending now. Retirement is a vacation. I don't think he has any go-go, slow-go, no-go fun expenses built into that. He has what he's doing fun now, which might be going out on weekends. When he retires, you're doing nothing Monday through Sunday.
The good news is you've stopped saving for retirement because now you're spending in retirement. So some of that that you were devoting to saving, I'm hoping he's been actively saving to probably has if he's amassed the $1.4 million. So some of that can be re-diverted over to spend on things in retirement. But we generally see the spending increase during, especially relatively young. He's only in his late 50s. He has a long stretch of what we call the go-go years, where you're young enough and healthy enough to really enjoy this new vacation from work. It's, you know, the vacation is, I should put in air quotes, right? Because people's vision of a vacation is different. It doesn't mean you're going to just lounge around on a beach unless that's your idea of a permanent vacation. It could be, I'm going to have all these new hobbies. I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to fill, you know, whatever you decide to do when you leave your career job. So he may not necessarily need the $84,000 per year to be spending on the same things he is now, but a lot of what he's going to save on is going to be spent with other things, plus some.
I interpreted it a little different than you did. He said our monthly spending is $7,000. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this 20 years.
True. If they use the word spending.
People, that's not saving. He's not counting the money that's going. This is
that's
net of the
true.
Money that's okay. being saved.
Yeah.
Because he specifically said spending. Here's my thoughts, listener. I nor Chris can tell you if $1.4 million is enough because I don't know anything else about you. I don't know your health. I don't know your longevity. I don't know how much Social Security you're required that you're eligible to receive. I know if you stop at 57, I don't know if you have a lot of zeros still in your Social Security calculation, meaning your Social Security is going to be lower than what you're estimating. I don't know what your wife is doing, if your wife is eligible for Social Security, if she is going to be claiming on you as a spouse, or if she has her own. I don't know if you have any pension income. I don't know your health. I don't know how much you're going to spend on fun things. You only told me you're spending $7,000 and Chris a month, and Chris and I can't even figure out if you're talking pre or post savings. I think post savings. So you're asking us a simple math, Chris. He's spending about 6% a year of his $1.4 million portfolio. A 6% withdrawal rate isn't even on the vernacular of quote-unquote safe. Not that you and I ever believe in a safe withdrawal rate. 6% a year at 57, it sounds low? That's crazy high. To make your money last, Chris and I believe vehemently in your minimum dignity floor, protecting and covering your minimum dignity floor with lifetime secure income, and then let your desired fund spending be exposed to the variability of your savings. The only way I, or a competent financial planner, Chris included, because he's extremely competent, the only way we could tell you if you could retire is to run an analysis. That's what I want to encourage him to do. Nobody, don't rely on someone on a podcast reading 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 sentences in an email and saying, yeah, you're okay. No, you got to keep working. I don't
know any of
that. It
doesn't look promising, just based on the numbers you spouted, the 6%. At the current spending level and his current savings, I would be very nervous without a plan. Once the plan is there, we might say, you know what, we were nervous about this, but when we really looked at the numbers in your specific situation, that's where a plan comes in. We can talk about kind of averages and normal numbers and all this kind of stuff that's spouted constantly in the press and in academic articles all the time. They're talking about the average of, and you usually can. They use words like that. Why bother with those generalities when you can figure it out for you personally?
And here's my other concern, though. All his money, let's face it, you got $50,000 in a bank account as an emergency reserve, essentially $1.4 million in IRAs and 401ks. I assumed a couple of other things, Chris. To amass $1.4 million in IRAs and 401ks, you didn't do it in IRAs without doing a rollover from something. He's been saving a lot of money in 401ks. He probably is a high wage earner. I'm guessing even conservatively saying, what if he made $150,000 a year? He only has 9 years of savings.
Right.
That you, assuming you only made $150,000, listener. And you think nine times your salary at age 57 is going to be able to support your salary every year, adjusted for inflation for the rest of your life? I have a problem with that. I also don't think his $7,000 is pre-tax. I think it's post-tax spending. I think it's net of taxes, net of his savings. So I don't know what his tax situation is going to be, but I do know it's not that he's only going to take out $84,000 a year from his IRA, 401k. He's going to have to pay taxes on that. Now, he's in the fine state of Minnesota, but I'm not sure yet. Joe's here sitting to our right, but she would have to research what Minnesota taxes are. Does he have income tax? Does he have local tax in Minnesota? Does he? He's also going to have federal income tax. So maybe instead of taking out $84,000, Chris, he's got to take out $100,000 or $110,000. Now he has less than 9 years of salary saved. A million ain't a million anymore. Just like Yogi Berra said, a nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. A million isn't worth a million anymore. So the end thing isn't being a millionaire, it's being a billionaire. If Gilligan's Island was now, it would be sung, the billionaire and his wife. It wouldn't be the millionaire anymore. Who cares about a millionaire? Gilligan could have had $1 million.
Probably did.
So what I want to explain is you need an analysis. We need to look at far more than just trying to decide, is $1.4 million enough to cover $84,000? Mm-hmm. My initial gut reaction is no.
No.
But I won't know for sure until I crunch numbers in a little more depth. It is quite possible the numbers would show yes, absolutely. It is quite possible that the numbers are going to show no. If you lose your job, go back to work. And I don't know what kind of job he has, Chris. If it's a really specialized job that could take a while, he may need more than $50,000 emergency reserve. I'm going to encourage him to try to grow that emergency reserve. Or while you have a job, which I assume pays quite well, get a home equity loan. As an emergency reserve, get the line of credit. Don't borrow on it. But with your salary, you'll probably get approved, assuming you have equity in your home. I don't know this either. But the reason I would want is, if that $50,000 isn't enough and you don't get severance, or the severance isn't enough, or unemployment, it would be nice to have that home equity loan to fall back on, hopefully temporarily. You're not going to run up debt right. If you can't find a new job, so be careful on that. But I'm just saying, if that $50,000 mm-hmm. goes quickly and it's another month or two before you're going to get a job, it would be nice to be able to borrow some money and then pay it back real quickly. Mm-hmm. But also keep in mind, listener, don't take any money out of the IRA if you lose your job. Take it out of your current employer's 401k, because you're over the age of 57. You'll avoid the 10% pre-withdrawal penalty that you will have to pay on your IRA. Just want to throw that little
tip. And you won't qualify for the HELOC after you've lost your job.
No, you won't.
So that's why you do it ahead of time before. Absolutely. It's kind of like getting fire insurance. You can't wait till the house is on fire to do it.
Right, and don't walk into the bank saying, I'm going to lose my job any day now. I want to borrow some money. No, you do not say that, Pot. Yep. You just tell him that you have a job.
Now, the good news is he's going to have a wicked large. You like that?
I like that.
I'm learning the Boston here. So a wicked large tax planning window open up when he retires.
I was thinking that, but he doesn't have a lot of non-qual money to spend. He's going to have to take from $84,000 from his IRA, pay taxes on it. It's going to fill up a lot of those lower brackets.
Yeah, but he still might have some opportunities here and there, depending on exactly what he's spending and what he's doing. So,
but again, even to determine if conversions make sense for him, Chris, I need to crunch the numbers, because he may not be able to pay the taxes now.
For sure.
Again, I'm hesitant to say $1.4 million would be plenty if your average salary was $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. I'm guessing it's higher.
Or if you were 90.
Or if you were 90.
Much older.
But at 57, to save $1.4 million, which you should pat yourself on the back for, you and your wife did a wonderful job. But I'm guessing your salary is probably around $150,000, if not more, which means 9 years of savings. 9 years of savings at age 57 is not that much. And you would be retiring or being laid off at probably one of the riskiest times ever in stock market history, listener. Market hasn't corrected in 11 years. One, you lose your job or retire, retire forcefully. In other words, you said there's a problem with the job. You might have to retire earlier. What if then a big drop happens, Chris, in the market, and 1.4 million loses 20%, and now he's got 1.1 million? Now that's a huge difference. Now you got 7 years of savings, and things start to look ugly. You might, listener, you might, and I say this as an ex-cop. A lot of my cop buddies want to get out more than the 32 years they have to work as a city cop in Massachusetts to get their pension, Chris. And they say, if only I could find a job that paid the same, or if only I can get my pension turned on early enough and then get a part-time job to make up the difference. What I'm getting at is a lot of times you want out of what you do now. You would be willing to accept a lower-paying job. You just don't know if the rest of your assets would be enough to cover the difference and then retire on in another 10 years or 8 years or however long you were thinking of doing it. So that would be another part that could be built into an analysis for him. Mm-hmm. What if you left this job that clearly has some turmoil, even if you took lower pay, made up the difference, that might make all the difference in the world in retiring, because he might still be able to generate 50, 60, 70, 80,000 a year of income, and now he's only taking out 20, 30,000 a year or even less, to, 10,000 a year that he has to take out to supplement a part-time salary. And that might be enough to get him through retirement. Crunch the numbers, listener. Hire a good planner who can help you crunch those numbers, who can specialize in retirement. Also look at the tax implications and if there's any tax planning opportunities, as Chris alluded to. But I would look to do a plan and not just rely on someone saying, yeah, you're all set. Because we're certainly not saying that. We're saying you need a plan and we're not sure.
Exactly.
Anything you want to add?
Fun fact, you mentioned Gilligan. Bob Denver's daughter went to high school here in Fort Collins.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's why I said it's a fun fact.
Did she look like Gilligan?
A little.
Wow. Is she still here?
No, unknown. This was a while ago.
Did you go to school with her?
No, but I know someone who did.
Oh.
So.
Wow. Yeah. I dated a girl.
That's why it's a fun fact.
I dated a woman once, a long time ago,
yeah,
whose roommate in college,
yeah,
was Neil Diamond's daughter.
Okay. You know a girl whose
I dated
roommate
her
in college
was Neil Diamond's daughter.
Was Neil Diamond's daughter. Oh. So kind of, there's, yeah. Nice.
So that's about my claim to fame.
Well, I wasn't claiming fame. It's just a fun fact. So.
Well, there's my fun fact.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So are we on to another question? I see.
We are. Joe has pulled over and plopped her fine self down in a chair next to us, and she's going to answer some tax questions that we have. Joe, for those who don't know, is Joe Montana. Say Montana. Joe Madonna.
Yeah.
Just change your name to Montana.
To satisfy me. To accommodate your...
Well, I'm a football fan, so I always say Joe Montana instead of Joe Madonna.
How about just Joe? You'll remember that part.
Yeah, we can remember Joe. I haven't screwed that part up, have I?
Not yet.
You could just call me by my full name, which is Johanna, if that helps.
He'll never do that.
Yeah.
Johanna Rosanna?
I'll come up with something else.
Johanna Rosanna Dana?
Do you even remember what we're talking about?
She has no idea.
No,
I didn't think she did. You never heard of Rosanna?
Rosanna Dana. No, it's fine.
No?
That's old school. That's before she was born.
You think so?
I think so.
Wow.
That's old.
Gosh, you're old.
Yeah. You think, Grandpa? Okay.
Okay, we got a couple of tax questions in. Joe, for those who don't know, is the tax go-to person in our office. I figured you needed a break because you looked lost in, not
well,
lost.
Well, it's tax season, I know, so it's very draining.
Engrossed in all those tax returns you're doing. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of a break, come on the podcast, chat to our listeners a little bit about two questions. Does it matter which one I read first?
No. Whichever one you want.
Okay, I'll randomly choose this one first. Okay, this is, he's from Dreamland. What state would that be?
They're just making stuff up to be anonymous. That's not an actual place.
George from Dreamland?
Yeah.
Well, his name is also not George.
Yeah, so, they're just making it up. Remember, like all the emails from Georgia? That was just them being funny. We have a very hilarious
Podcastians have a sense of humor from Dreamland. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, this is a tax question. I will read it. Joe will answer it. Dear Jim, Chris, and Joe. Did you see that,
Whoa,
Joe?
They already, you're famous.
Yeah, they addressed it right to her.
She's only been on once, right?
Twice.
Twice. But still, nobody knew our names after the second show. Go ahead.
Or at least yours. Remember, there's true story. We got an email once. It was Jim, Pete, and the other guy.
That was heartwarming. Yeah.
Now, was that listener a sense of humor and was just digging
you?
I have
no idea. I felt bad for a while on
that.
He
was like the third tenor. Remember that? Oh, God. Please say yes.
The third tenor?
No. Tenor.
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 I was like, oh, yeah, the Boston, the tenor.
Yeah.
Sorry. The tenor.
That's a Seinfeld episode. The third tenor.
Got it. He's like the third tenor.
Yeah, that nobody knows the name of. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jim, Chris, and Joe, I just finished listening to your podcast of March 8th, 2019, in which a listener asked a question
that
about...
That was just 4 days ago.
Yeah, well, this is a new email. It's taxes I'm trying to get.
Wow.
I wanted to give Joe a break.
Thank you.
Rapid turnaround.
Plus, it's tax season. You don't want to answer a tax question in April or February or July.
Pick a month.
July. You don't want to answer in July. I'm trying to find a month after tax season. I was having a bad time on that
go
one.
Go ahead.
Okay. A listener asked a question on the most he and his spouse could earn without paying taxes in 10 years when they plan on retiring using current tax laws as their guidelines. The answer I thought I understood you to say was $24,000. I would like to propose the following scenario and would appreciate if you would let me know if I missed the boat somewhere. So let's stop there, Joe. I think he was referring, and you can chime in too, Chris, about the standard deduction.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they were over 65, it would actually be $26,500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you get a little bump in the standard deduction.
Right, if you're over 65.
And I don't think we mentioned that show.
Probably not. That's why I'm mentioning it now.
Yeah, good.
Because you guys, both of you, dropped the boat on that. You'll see that reflected in your pay next week.
Drop the boat?
Drop the boat on that.
No.
Drop the ball.
A ball?
Yes, you drop the ball, not
or
the boat.
Sunk the boat.
Oh. Sunk, yeah.
Whatever. Rule number one, drop do not make boat. Fun of the guy who signs your paycheck, woman.
Go ahead.
I would like to propose the following scenario and would appreciate it if you will let me know if I missed the boat. That's where I got boat from. Subconsciously, I was staring at this, and that's why I said boat, not ball.
Go ahead.
I'm just telling you.
Okay.
That was a pure subconscious mistake. All right. Let's assume someone makes $75,000, of which $25,000 is interest. $25,000 is dividends from stocks they own, and $25,000 is long-term capital gains that they realize. It's my understanding that the qualified dividends and cap gains are taxed at zero if you are a joint filer and earn under $78,750. That would leave $25,000 of interest. If you subtract the $24,000 standard deduction, that leaves just $1,000 of taxable income. In the 10% bracket, that would mean $100. There's not zero taxes, but that's pretty darn close. Am I accurate? George from Dreamland. Go ahead. You can answer.
Yeah, so he's actually right on the money as far as capital gains go. So that's passive income. It's going to be dividends and long-term capital gains. It's not going to be short-term cap gains. So you're going to have all that money coming out of a long-term capital gain or dividends, and then his interest obviously is going to be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. So he's right. If he falls in the, well, now they're different. It's not 10, but 12. If he falls into 12%, then he's going to pay ordinary income tax rate on the interest. So yeah, he's actually right on. But that means he also has to have all of passive income, and that's married filing jointly up to $77,000 essentially. And $38,000 if he's just by himself. So if you want all of your income coming from an account that is only long-term and dividends, and you can make it doing that, then great.
One extra flourish in there, if he's talking about in retirement ages, he'd have to then also worry about Social Security taxation, which using the numbers he's got, he's going to push into where his Social Security would become taxable, where if it was below certain limits for married filing jointly below that $32,000 figure, which he listed enough that when you add in half of his Social Security, he's going to blow past the $32,000 number.
My question on this would be to carry on that. When Justin was here, he used to explain to me that what this gentleman is talking about, listener, is that capital gains can be zero taxed if you are in the 12%, used to be 15% tax bracket or lower. But Justin used to explain, and he wrote an article on this, that the zero capital gains tax rate isn't really zero, because the capital gains are filling your lower brackets first, pushing other income into higher brackets, including Social Security. And he wrote an article explaining all that, that you might be getting zero taxed on your capital gains, but it's increasing the taxes on your Social Security or your other income. So using Justin's logic, and he's not here, and I'm certainly not the tax expert, I still don't quite follow how that all works. So if his $25,000 of cap gains, which is tax-free, is still going to fill the 10% bracket and some of the 12, and then the dividends sit in there, and then his income sits on top of that, and excluding Social Security yet, it's still going to equal $100 in taxes?
Yeah, because he's got all passive income. It's all long-term capital gain.
Because it's all passive. Yeah. But when Social Security turns on.
Right, then that those income from practically every source is considered in that MAGI calculation, that modified adjusted gross income number, which only has to be $32,000 before you start to enter the taxation area for Social Security. Below that, you have no taxes on Social Security benefits. So this is another case where even if the income taxes aren't impactful, the income that you're recognizing will impact other things that are taxable. And that's kind of that hidden or stealth tax that we talk about sometimes. So I guess the broader embellishment of our prior conversation would be, in any specific circumstance, there's going to be several moving parts depending on what types of income you have, turning on when and recognized in what year, that could cause your overall tax story to change. There isn't just a number we can throw out there, which this listener pointed, you know, essentially discovered that because he described a scenario of different types of taxable, possibly taxable gains and taxable income coming in a certain combination that would still end up with little or no tax. Where if it was all earned income, that's a whole other story now, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of answered it simplistically last week. I agree, but.
So when I say he's right on the money, he is. Like, in theory, this could work.
For his story. Yeah,
but
for his story.
For this to actually happen is really unlikely. It's not.
It really depends on how you've, I guess, you've had to intentionally position yourself to be able to do that.
Yeah. So it's not like a normal scenario.
It's a textbook case.
Yes.
But maybe that's his real
situation. It's academic, but it probably isn't going to happen. But just so I have a better understanding of this, Joe, so when even if you get tax-free capital gains, it does fill your lower brackets.
It does
fill
your brackets up. Yeah.
But other income sits on top of it and will be subject to higher taxes if the cap gains weren't there.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. But in his case, that other income is being wiped out because he has the $24,000 standard deduction and he only has $25,000 of other income.
Yeah, and his is interest income. Right. So
which would be taxed as income.
At an ordinary income tax rate. Yeah, so in his scenario, it works.
Okay. And as you rightly pointed out, Chris, once Social Security kicks on, these all things start to change.
These change, even if the income tax still is very low or zero even, you could have Social Security suddenly become taxable because you've exceeded their very low now income limits, which for married filing joint is only $32,000 before half of your Social Security starts getting sucked into your taxable
tax
income,
calculation.
Tax calculation, and then at 44,000 up to 85%, and it kind of depends on specifically how much earnings you have. That's why they say up to 85%. But
now,
for most
this,
people, it turns out to be 85 if you blow past that number.
On this tax-free cap gain issue again, Joe, does, let's just say in his scenario, there was 25,000 of capital gains we assumed long-term in order for it to be tax-free. So he's got 25,000 of long-term capital gains, comes in 100% tax-free. Does all 25,000 fill his lower brackets? So he pretty much wipes out that small 10% bracket, and it started to fill some of his and his wife's 12% bracket. Does all go in or just a portion of it?
All of it.
All of it goes in?
Yeah.
And then the other income sits on top. So what Justin always wanted our listeners to understand, and what I think Joe is agreeing with, you may have tax-free you may have tax-free capital gains, but you may end up paying more income taxes on your other income, which kind of makes tax-free capital gains not really tax-free. Because you're paying more income tax on other things, which is taxed at higher rates than capital anyways.
Which just proves the reason why we need people like Joe. Taxes are complicated.
Are they?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
When one thing changes on one hand, you got something else that might change.
Yeah, and then you have to separate short-term and long-term capital gains because those are treated completely different.
Right, but in
so
his
in
very
his case, he's got
academic
long-term.
Question,
yeah.
it worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll move on to the final tax question.
Which will have to be the final question for this episode.
Okay. This must be a woman because they signed it Georgette.
Wouldn't have to be.
Well, it would be George if it was
maybe
a guy.
Maybe someone just likes the name Georgette.
Oh, they're really trying to mess with us. Mm-hmm. They're really protecting their anonymity.
Mm-hmm. Anonymous gender as well.
I won't say that word. Georgette in Washington State. Hi, Jim and Chris. No Joe on this one. Hi, Jim and Chris. And Joe. I love your show. In the episode about 60-day rollovers reminded me of my tax planning problem. My husband is a shareholder in a shareholder corporation, so we have to include K-1 data on our taxes. We don't receive this data until September of the following year, which makes tax planning difficult. For example, in 2018, we won't receive our K-1 until September 2019. I have asked their accountant if it's possible to estimate the K-1, but they said they can't because they have to wait on data from the partner company. Do they have any obligation to provide us with an estimate? That's her first question. Mm-hmm. Then she continues, and I want to highlight that first question so I don't forget. Okay. Then she continues. The K-1 has swung from a loss of $13,000 in 2011 to a profit of $9,000 in 2017. We are in the 12% federal bracket, but very close to the 22% bracket, and I would prefer to avoid the higher marginal rate. We max out our IRAs, which gives us some flexibility since we can recharacterize those contributions from a Roth to a traditional IRA to lower taxable income if necessary. However, I would like to do some Roth conversions and perhaps take more than my required minimum distributions I have to take from an inherited IRA. But I am hesitant to do this without having a better idea of our taxable income for the year. I'm also concerned that at some point we may face a penalty for underpayment of taxes. Do you have any suggestions? We contribute as much as we can to pre-tax employer plans, although not the maximum amount. Whew, that's a tough one. And we max out an HSA as well. Thank you, Georgette in Washington.
What are the rules on the K-1?
Well, they don't have any obligation until extension comes along. And
yeah, that's what I was afraid of. And that's why it's September, is there every single year they're using the extension from March 15th to September. So that kind of is a bummer, especially if they're worried about conversions.
Yeah.
I don't want to trample on your toes.
No,
on
I unfortunately I don't have a good answer for her, Georgette. Yes. Because yes, these companies are entitled to an extension time. So they have to file by March 15th, or if they file an extension, September. So they have up until that time to issue a K-1. And they're not obligated, although it is generous and nice of the CPAs or accountants to, you know, kind of estimate for people. That's, you know, that is common practice.
So here's a case of those, quote, evil people that were taking advantage of Roth recharacterizations. Here's a legitimate reason why we need Roth recharacterizations. They convert, they get all the way to September and realize, I shouldn't have done it, or I shouldn't have done so much. I've got a month now. If recharacterizations were allowed, they'd have till October 15th to fix it with no penalties, and they can't because recharacterizations are dead, because they went after this mysterious group that was somehow manipulating their world through recharacterizations, where really what they've done is they've pulled the rug out from under people with legitimate reasons like this to be able to do recharacterizations.
Exactly. And the 60-day Roth rollover strategy isn't going to work as well. So there's not much they can do because they can't recharacterize.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
The 60-day rollover isn't going to work because they have to do a conversion needs to happen in the year you want the conversion to take place in. So a 2018 conversion has to happen by December 31st, 2018. The 60-day rollover has to be put back in by the end of February, beginning of March, and they're not going to get their K-1 info till September. So there's nothing that I can think of short of what she's already thought of. You cannot recharacterize a Roth conversion, but you can recharacterize a Roth contribution. So she's thinking, I could recharacterize that. That's okay.
Yeah.
But outside of that, no, I can't think of anything she can do, especially as it relates to the ability to convert. Short of guessing and hoping, I just want to throw out one thing, though. Why don't you do a longer-term tax projection analysis? We can do it for you, and I hate this selfish self-promotion. Is that what I'm saying? Shameless
Sure.
self-promotion. Mm-hmm. I knew I was thinking something. Shameless self-promotion like we did on the other caller, but we could help him. We could help you, or someone else can. You don't have to work with us. But what I'm talking about, and Joe, you know where I'm going with this. If we did a tax projection analysis, I want to see what their future tax rate is going to be when their RMDs begin. She's trying to stay in the 12% bracket. That 22% bracket right above there is going to be 24, if not higher, after 2025. And Lord only knows where it will go after that. And maybe you want to take advantage. If we could show that you are probably going to be in the 24 bracket, or maybe even the 32, 33, 35 bracket, when RMDs begin, pensions begin, Social Security begins, converting at the 22 might seem like a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. Especially, listener, if you get a massive drop in some of your more aggressive investments, might have happened, tech funds were falling 20, 25, 30% for a very brief period in the fourth quarter of last year.
Mm-hmm.
The FANG stocks got decimated. Now, it's all come back, and it doesn't come back normally that fast, so don't get used to this, folks, but it sets my point. Had you converted an asset that dropped 20, 30, 40%, even if it pushed you into the 22% bracket, that recovery is 100% tax-free. Don't miss out on that opportunity. And to recognize the 22% bracket is lower than it's going to be after 2025. Now, I get going from a 12 to a 22 is a big jump. That's a massive jump. But it's only those dollars above that that are being taxed at that. It's not all their dollars, Joe, right? It's progressive.
Right.
So don't overanalyze. What is that called? Analysis by paralysis by analysis?
Other way. But yeah, people know what you mean.
Oh, I said it wrong? I think I said it right. Analysis by paralysis.
That's right.
Oh, what did I say?
Paralysis by analysis.
That's the one it is, actually.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because you're paralyzed by analyzing.
Okay.
We have an impartial smart man here. Peter.
Yes.
Is it analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis?
The latter.
Ladder means the one I just
paralysis
said, or the first
by analysis.
Yeah. Paralysis by analysis,
which I think is what you said. So I think you were right on that one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But you want to apologize?
But moving on.
Moving on. I just had to make my case.
Okay.
So I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, but I think this person is overanalyzing it and paying way too much attention trying to stay in the 12% bracket. You should be looking by doing a forward-looking tax projection analysis. If you continue with this strategy, what is it going to look like after 70 and a half? And what is your tax situation then going to be? And how confident do you feel that taxes aren't going to rise over the course of your retirement as this country comes to grips with a current $22 trillion in debt growing exponentially? Did I nail that?
No.
Damn it. Whatever that word is.
Luckily, I don't think it's growing exponentially.
That's the word?
That would be really scary. But
okay.
It's growing a lot.
Wicked fast.
Wicked fast.
That's what it means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So when we come to deal with all this debt in the future, I think taxes are going to go up a wicked lot. And you're going to look back and say, man, did I screw it not converting in that 22% bracket? I think you should look at a tax mm-hmm. projection analysis and go from there. That's my mm-hmm. 2 cents for whatever it's worth. Anything yeah. else you want to add, Joe?
Well, unfortunately, she's saying that they have sometimes losses of 13,000 and sometimes gains of 9, so she doesn't really know exactly where to put her money. But like you said, she's doing all the right things. She's doing everything that she can do. The only other thing that you can keep doing is just asking that company to provide more information to you. But they have to wait on all the other data sources in order to get what they need to fill out the returns.
I don't want her to waste an opportunity to convert, especially an asset that fell substantially in value.
Yeah.
Get it into the Roth. Pay the darn taxes, because if you're converting something that fell 20, 30, 40%, that's saving you 20, 30, 40% on taxes at rates that are probably the lowest you're going to see
yeah.
forever.
True.
And I just would want to know, if I was her, carrying on the way you are, what are your taxes going to look like after 70 and a half? And if it's going to be even in the 22 bracket, that's going to be then 24, which probably will be around 28 or 30 at some point in the future. Maybe converting at 22 would have made sense. That's all I'm saying, mm-hmm. especially if it's an asset that fell 20, 30, 40% in value the next time the market's correct. Just my thoughts. Okay. Yeah,
good things to think about.
That other person there, that impartial smart man who said I was right and you were wrong, that was Peter. He's coming on the EDU show we're about to record, so we'll wrap up this Q&A show.
Okay. I really dropped the boat on that one.
Ha, ha, ha.
Mm-hmm.
I told you. I said boat because I was.
Oh, there's always an excuse.
I was looking at that email.
Oh, I get it.
And subconsciously no, saw
like
the
it.
Word boat.
I'm going to use it that way from now on. It sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
Ha ha ha, wise guy.
So that's the end of our show.
Tell people how they can reach us if they want to.
Well, we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in the Northern Colorado area. We can help you throughout the nation, though. Don't have to be in Colorado, although we'd love to see you if you live here or you happen to make a visit to our fine state. But if you've got anything retirement related specifically, these tax questions we get all the time, we've got retirement distribution questions, which people might ask what the heck that is. That's how are we going to spend our money and where are we going to get it when we want to spend it in retirement, which you might think spending's the easy part. Actually, that's the part that becomes quite difficult for people, and having a plan can really help guide you through that process. So that's kind of our specialty here, that and all related topics to that. And if you'd like to talk to us a little bit and see if there's something we can do for you, we offer a coffee and a second opinion is what we call that, where we can sit down over the phone or live and chat with you about what your retirement planning needs might be, see if there's something we can help you with. And if we can't help you directly, we'll certainly guide you or try to guide you towards some resources that can help you. But you can schedule a coffee and a second opinion right on our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You can either reach out the old-fashioned way with a phone call or an email, or you can just schedule your appointment right on the website. There's actually a calendar app on there that you can schedule your appointment directly, and we'd love to talk to you. So thank you for listening, and I guess that's it. Anything else you want to add, Jim?
Negative. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week.
We will be back next week. I think we had a live caller.
Another one?
We did. So
did he hang up
next
on
week?
Us?
Well, we have to go to Pete, so we can't take it.
Huh.
We have to go to
well,
podcast
is it
number two.
Question? If we only we had got the estate
if
guy
we
here.
Only had to do one podcast, we wouldn't have to end the show.
No, if we were doing two Q&As, we could have kept going and answered his question.
Yeah, we'll see.
But my
I'll find out and we'll bring it on the next show if it's true.
If it's an estate question, we got the man here.
Absolutely.
We can have Pete answer it now.
Correct. We'll find that out and we're not going to answer it on this show because we have no idea what it is.
All right. Could have been a brilliant question.
Could have been. Unlikely. Unlikely related to estate planning. It was probably brilliant.
I thought you were making fun planning. Of that listener who's never going to call back now.
No, no, that's not what I meant. It's not likely an estate planning question because Pete wasn't on the show.
All right. Well, he is now, so let's get him on.
Perfect. So we'll see everybody next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.